Poker Live podcast. Some people thought, Brad, that I was only going to do one show and I was going to disappear for another 3 years from YouTube. But I called up Brad. I said, Brad, come on by. Yeah. Brad came by the GTO headquarters here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And listen, man, we got the man, Brad Owen, in the house over here. Fresh off his YouTube poker content domination, playing high stakes poker now. The man is an ambassador. He's a business owner. He's a content creator. And soon to be a father. And I know everyone, all your fans out there, are excited about that. I'm excited about that, Brad. So thank you for coming on by before this week happens. And
baby's born in 2 days. So wow, very excited about that. Getting the house all prepped, getting my last poker sessions in to kind of have a pipeline of videos to get to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you just mentioned you were playing at a bunch of that Bellagio. You're battling a bunch of high stakes over there.
Yeah.
Going through these big swings.
Yeah, huge swings. Can't wait to kind of share the vlogs. They'll come out in a couple of weeks, but just like 30, 40K pots. Don't really want to give too many spoilers, but some of the, probably the most exciting month of poker that I played was maybe this month. December was up there as well, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting out those videos now from the WPT World Championship, and that was a wild, wild run. Best month of poker that I've ever had was during that time.
Was that time, yeah. So basically now it seems like you're kind of regularly playing, you know, not as many tournaments, except maybe some big tournament series. If WPT has a big tournament series, you'll play some of those. I think you played like the 25K or the 50K or something like that.
Yeah.
The biggest buy-in that you played in a tournament. And now you're also mixing in a lot more high stakes cash games too, as you mentioned, right? So you're playing at the Bellagio, you're playing what, 25, 50, 100 or 100, 100, or how does the games work there? How do the stakes work there?
Basically, a couple times a week, there are two games running, but they're both organized by the same people in Bobby's room. So there'll be a 25-50 game, and they'll simultaneously run a 100-100 game. And sometimes that game's even a little bit bigger. And so a lot of times, someone will start out in the 25-50 game, and then when a seat opens up in the 100-100, they'll get switched over there. But I played 100-100 once, and then I played 25-50, I think, four times in the last like 2 weeks or so.
Well, yeah, so you're kind of getting comfortable with those high stakes, it seems like. It seems like you've kind of been there for a little while. How long have you been playing those cash games on a consistent basis? Because I know you bounce around between small stakes and meetup games and kind of play anything, it almost seems like.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy to play all stakes. These games are just really good. I mean, they're reserved games, so the guys who are running them know what they're doing, and they try to keep the amount of pros in to a minimum, and there are some business guys that are in it that make the game really profitable. So as often as I'm invited, I'm pretty much trying to play in them.
Yeah, it's cool because you also get to make content. So then you make the video and then you put it on your YouTube channel, and most of your YouTube videos are getting hundreds of thousands of views. I mean, people are still very interested and up to date on the career of Brad Owen. It's pretty crazy to see, man, for how long you've been doing it. And you still got such this crazy support and this crazy community. You know, it's wild. What are your thoughts about just like all that? Those people still come out. They want more. If you play six sessions, they want to see the six sessions. They're excited for them.
Yeah, I just, since I started the YouTube channel 7.5 years ago, I've always kind of wanted to push myself to be as good of a poker player as I can. And then with the content creation stuff, you want to kind of push the envelope as well. But I've always tried to kind of balance that out, where I'm really just moving up in stakes as I normally would progress if I wasn't doing the content. You know, like I want to like try to be responsible. So win at certain stakes for a while and then keep moving up. And I've had success pretty much at all the stakes. And so now I'm, you know, moving up to Bobby's room.
Bobby's room. Yeah. I mean, I guess I see what you're saying about the stakes, because, you know, once you start becoming an ambassador, you become someone who's making money from content, from products, from services, you have training courses, you have affiliate products, then at that point in time, it's easy to sort of take that money, which we see some streamers doing now. We see some content creators doing this now, where now they feel like they got to play 200, 400, they're having these massive swings. I mean, we're seeing we're seeing a couple of the guys do it. You know, Mariano's doing it, I know Rampage is doing it. You know, Wolfgang, kind of, he just got to the high stakes and had some winning sessions, so we're probably going to see more of him there. So it seems very like surreal almost seeing all these like people go from content creator to ambassador to high stakes player to, you know, really having success in all these different arenas. I feel like that's the new, like, that is almost like a new way to do poker that really was never there before.
It definitely takes off a lot of stress when you have income coming in from, yeah, affiliate marketing stuff and the YouTube ad revenue. But still, like, Andrew and I, we grew up, like, grinding
2-5, 5-10, yeah.
Before we had the YouTube stuff, I went broke at one point and then came back to poker for a living in 2015. And I still kind of have like that mentality of kind of trying to do things correctly with the bankroll. It is interesting because we do dedicate so much time to creating videos on YouTube, where if we were just playing poker full time, rather than spending a lot of time focusing on content creation, that we would have made, you know, a lot of money playing poker that we kind of sacrificed, and we probably would have studied more and gotten better. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, interesting thing to think about. I mean, you know, it depends what you like to do as well. You know, you've been grinding these videos, like you said, you started a channel 7 years ago, and you know, both like you said, I mentioned Andrew as well. You guys both been putting these videos out for so long, documenting your journeys, documenting your stories. It's, you know, I've had to take a break. I mean, I personally couldn't, you know, I've had to take breaks over the years. It's just been, you know, you guys don't seem to take breaks. You don't really seem to like take any time off. How do you maintain that consistency, that dedication, that focus?
I really enjoy it. I love playing. And then when I play an interesting session, I can't wait to kind of share that with people and see and insert stupid jokes in the vlogs and just see people's reactions to it, see what they like and don't like. And that part's all fun. And when I'm like writing the scripts out, I'm on GTO Wizard and other solvers, like looking up what I should have done. So that's kind of my study time also. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of things that I want to accomplish in poker. You know, I it's mostly in tournaments now because I've had some big final tables. I really want to take down a big tournament, and I keep kind of knocking on the door.
Getting close, yeah.
But haven't quite accomplished that yet.
Yeah, so it sounds like you stay focused by enjoying what you're doing and kind of like, yeah. And instead of, because some content creators, once you make your content, you're like, it's like a chore. It's a pain. It's like, oh my God, I got to do it again. Whereas it sounds like when you're making this stuff, you're putting good energy into it. You're putting good vibes into it. Something that you want to be doing. It's something that you look forward to seeing the reactions of your fans. And to me, I mean, that's incredibly important. It's a very underrated characteristic of a content creator, is to enjoy what you're doing and like what you're doing and, you know, challenging yourself to when you're doing it, right? Like you mentioned earlier. So it's interesting. Now you're taking that same approach to put to tournaments.
Yeah.
And now you're saying, my main goal is to win a big event. I want to get a big score. I want to win a big WPT event. And like you said, right, there's really no way to hack that process, right? You just kind of do it. And it might take a while, right?
It is tough balancing all the cash games that I'm playing and content and everything. Like, I'm not really playing that many tournaments a year. You know, there's a couple times I go hard during the summer and then December for the World Championship stuff. But other than that, I don't even know if I played one Poker Go tournament this year. I think that's that's it so far. So there's some tournaments coming out that I'm excited for. And yeah, hopefully I'll just continue to improve and feel like every time I get experience running deep in something, it helps for the next time. You know, you learn little things and try and go further and further.
What are you picking up? Because it's a good point, because you are a cash game player, so you're still adjusting to tournaments. And yeah, tournaments, when you run deep, it's not anything like cash game at all. It's a completely different arena.
Yeah, well, so that 50K was really cool because I was able to compete with Jason. Like, the final table was Jason Kuhn, Ike Haxton, Bonomo, a bunch of other people.
Ike had the mask.
Seth Davies, yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying, I mean, I don't care if the guy want to wear a mask, but people on Twitter, they love it when he wear a mask.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's trying to put people on tilt or whatever. I think that's kind of...
taking safety precautions, Brad. He's taking... he's a safe guy. Ike Hollywood Haxton, a safe guy. Yeah. He needs his mask. I mean...
But anyway, when I'm running deep in something and I'm around these guys, and I played with Vogelsang and a bunch of other guys during the 50K and also during the 10K event, I just look at what they're doing and try to pick up on anything that I can and get better. But like, ICM stuff is something that is really brand new to me. I need to do a lot more studying with that, but I feel like I've learned a decent amount even the last 6 months, and it's helped me ladder up, but perhaps sometimes I'm playing a bit too safe and need to ramp up the aggression.
So when you're around Kuhn, when you're around Hollywood, when you're around Justin, what are you seeing that's different in those guys that you're not seeing in other events?
Jason, he just did some wild stuff on the bubble as the chip leader going against Cabrel, who is like second or third in chips. Kuhn was just like three bet ripping small blind anytime Cabrel would open on the button for just like piles. He was just, it was ridiculous. And it's 108K money bubble. So for me, that's so much money. For these guys, it's what they do every day.
Four buy-ins or two buy-ins. It's like barely nothing.
It was just cool to watch. Like Foxen, he actually stone bubbled it. Chidwick soft bubbled it. And then it was just insane for me to be around all these guys that I look up to and respect so much. And to just, see them like in the zone, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I used to love playing against the best players, seeing the strategies they're using, seeing how they might handle themselves. And online, it's different. You can't see them in person. You get to see their demeanor. You get to feel their energy. And I do think there's a lot to table presence, the way you kind of can make other people feel at the table.
Yeah.
And, there is that intimidating presence that you could potentially have. And I think people probably feel that when they play against you. They feel like
maybe
you're
5'10". But.
Yeah, like you're one of those guys. Oh, damn, there's Brad. This guy's been doing this for so long. So, now you get a little taste of how maybe you make other people feel at the table. And
yeah,
maybe it makes you more aware of your own presence at the table when you're playing against your normal games. You might be say, hey, I know how to turn it on. Yeah. I saw these guys turned it on.
These guys, they just kind of exude so much confidence because they're in their element, and I don't have that at the 50K level. I might have that when I'm playing like 1Ks and 1500s and stuff.
Yeah.
And occasionally, some other spots and definitely in cash games, I feel really comfortable and stuff. But yeah, it was just wild. I loved it.
Yeah. So, training right now, obviously training's evolving so much and there's all these different trainers and programs and mm-hmm. and you can with Rue, the G2 Wizard AI, you can put like custom inputs and it's like the game is changing for building strategies. And so what kind of tools or what kind of training or coaching are you doing to stay up to date?
I have to kind of make something a game. So, I want to get to 1 million subscribers on YouTube. You got to have something out in front of you that you're working towards. Otherwise, it's really easy to get kind of complacent and also burnt out. So getting to 1 million subscribers would be really cool. And then winning a tournament would be really cool. So I'm fortunate that there are a lot of poker companies that want to work with me because I have the YouTube channel. So all the coaching sites kind of compete to get advertisement spots on my channel. I also don't want to like just spam people with advertisements on videos all the time, mm-hmm. So I'm really selective with what companies I work with and how often I'm kind of promoting certain things. But anyway, I have free access to pretty much all the sites. So I really enjoy kind of looking through those and taking tidbits from each one of them. I worked with Nick Petrangelo for the Upswing Smash Live Cash course, which,
Sounds like it helped you out a lot, right?
Yeah. I mean, Nick is just one of the world's absolute best players. And I definitely learned a lot from him. And sometimes it's not even super kind of tangible where like you're talking to him and you absorb stuff, but it's not like you're going to go out the next session and things are going to work immediately. It takes a long time to find these spots and mm-hmm. for everything to kind of work together to add to the bottom.
Compounds, yeah. When I work with my coaches and hold them 2-card PLO, I mean, they blow my mind every time. I'm like, what did this guy just say? Like, oh my God, it's amazing how good hold'em players are these days especially the online wizards. So a guy like Nicky P, I mean, this guy's locked in high stakes cash, high stakes tournaments for you to be able to go through that process with him.
Yeah.
Had to be just eye-opening by just kind of seeing how he's handling himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Having, just his telephone number is pretty cool.
Yeah. Are you sending him hands? Do you talk hands? Do you have like any friends? Or you still do the hand histories to friends? I mean, the vlog is, kind of that, right?
But yeah, most of my friends, I don't really talk about hands too much with friends. Like when Andrew and I get together, usually we end up talking about just other stuff, to be honest.
Yeah. That's how a lot of poker players get. Well, eventually, like year 10, you say, hey, I'm going to stop exchanging hands. Like, I already kind of have a good idea of maybe what to think about here or do here. And a lot of your study or maybe learning more, you know, heuristics that you can apply to a bunch of different spots versus like going over a single independent hand and finding some sort of interest in that single independent hand, which you still can. I mean, you know, depending on how nerdy you want to get with it. So,
yeah,
you know. Yeah. Do you have a preferred tool right now you're using or anything out there that you're finding? Because I'm using a bunch. I'm curious what...
I'm using GTO Wizard right now. I like using that. It's just like really quick to get outputs.
Mm-hmm.
I have Pio, but I don't... Honestly, I don't really use it much.
Yeah.
And then I know Upswing just came out with Lucid GTO, so they gave me a version of that to test. I think that just came to the market.
Yeah, it just came out. I've been using that for Heads Up. I've been using that for 6max, testing that out. I try to test that every software program. Mm-hmm. I'm meeting with software designers to potentially build something of my own one day, sort of like my own Big Poppy trainer. You know, I don't know what's going to be in there, but...
Big Poppy trainer?
I don't know what it's going to be called, but it can be called anything theoretically. But I'm like, I'm super, like, I love the trainers. I love playing with them. I love like figuring out new strategies. And it's so much more fun than like playing online poker, which is really generally boring. Sometimes, you know, the people could be like, it's not very safe. You know, like I don't go on any poker site and I'm ever like, it just always feels weird these days. I'm not to say you can't win money, not to say you can't figure out strategies. You can always game select. You always know how to find a bad player and win against a bad player, and you got to be more diligent than ever at online. But I found that not gambling has been really fun, just like building strategies, because the programs have leaderboards where it'll tell you, you know, it'll be gamified, like you said. It'll say there's a score here, you can try to get 99%, or you can try to play the hands out with the bot in a specific situation and test yourself there too.
So I saw that on Lucid GTO.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't quite sure. I never input like a username, it just let me play, so I kind of wanted to get up on the leaderboard.
Yeah, big poppy two card crusher was.
I need to talk to Mike Brady about that.
Yeah, Brady Hookman. Shout out to Brady.
How to figure out how to get my name up on the leaderboard.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it's getting high now because these guys. One guy said he posted on Instagram. He said he played for 8 hours.
But you input like your own screen name at some point?
Yeah, big poppy two card crusher.
Yeah, I never.
Yeah, you got it, and it's custom.
But
I was playing on it though.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I had to find it. It wasn't evident. Okay, so tools, trainers. You know, kind of sounds like that. What about for, you know, coaches, Nikki P, you know, you mentioned like courses too. Like there's just, the reason I ask is there's so much shit out there that, I mean, I'm figuring out for myself too. And I know a lot of fans out there are feeling the same thing. Like they want to know, you know, what are these guys who are really in the streets, really grinding, having success? Like what are they finding is something they're using?
I mean, Pio is like the best.
The best, yeah.
That's what Nikki P...
Yeah.
He's always, anytime we have our coaching sessions, he's like, all right, well, let me run this really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, do some node locking or whatever, and then figure out the output and then go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never really used Pio much for Hold'em because I really just started studying more Hold'em in the past couple of years. And I'm more of a GTO Wizard guy now. And I love the AI on there. It's like so...
It's so quick and easy.
Yeah.
That part is great about it.
Yeah. I've seen another one. I just tried a different one for PLO called PLO Genius. And meeting with them on Wednesday to maybe do something with them. So this is like for PLO.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about that.
I mean, I think GTO Wizard is all based on Pio stuff. Mm-hmm. So they just take those solutions and then they put them in a database. So you just run the spot and mm-hmm. it's like already on there. So you don't have to wait for it or anything.
Right. So that's why with the new addition, which is like kind of game changer in training, is that you can edit the variables that are ranges and you can edit the inputs.
Yeah.
So normally you can't necessarily edit a range and then get an instant input. You'd have to take time to be able to do it. Or if you try to input, you want to change how deep stack you are, you want to change maybe the bet size strategies, you can do all sorts of preparation and strategy building in this.
Is that with the AI thing?
Correct.
Yeah.
So
that was like a little bit intimidating for me to try to figure out. I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah.
I didn't really look into it too hard.
Well, that's why I got the coaches. The coach has been helping me out. I'm like, Tasha Tombos, you know, he's been out there helping me understand G2 Wizard program. So that's what I told him. I was like, you guys, like, people have no idea how to use this really. Yeah. It's so complicated, but you can still get a lot from different parts of it. I feel like that program, it goes from medium guy can learn something, newbies can learn something, but then the best of the best in the planet can really learn something too. So it kind of caters to different tiers and, you know, depends. It does, all these tools really depend on how you use it.
Yeah.
You know, even like a holder manager. I don't know. Do you ever use holder manager before?
I don't use holder manager.
Do you use any of the trackers on their phone that like track, you can put your sessions in there, like the tracker analytics 6 or anything like that, or Beanker?
I just use PokerBase. I was using Poker Income to track everything. You're talking about income and stuff?
Yeah. Like, well, there's some programs. Like I just was been talking with this founder. I think it was a Poker Analytics 6. And it can just, you can put in different things about the session. It's basically a data tracker, but instead of having like online poker where it automatic, you could set up a system on Holder Manager where the program sent the hand in there and then it just gave you all your stats. So if you play 1,000 hands, it would just have all your stats for your session. Huh. Whereas with live poker, you'd actually have to edit in yourself. And sure. What I find in that is that you can learn a lot from visualizing that data, because you see, whenever I play 10 hours, I always lose. Whenever I play 3 hours, I'm winning. When I play at this time, I'm winning. When I play these stakes, I'm winning. And instead of you having to manually track it, it gives you this visualized output. So for me, I found those in the past that were valuable. I'm using those now too. So I'm not sure if you have a preferred one you're using or if
you're... Maybe I need to get into that more, probably. Yeah.
Well, these were the keys. Like the tools that made really good online poker players are all had to do with data.
Yeah.
And tracking your data, being able to understand your weaknesses in your game, and then being able to plug the weaknesses in your game.
Yeah. But I feel like I'm just wondering what type of data you're looking at in those things.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can filter a lot of those by, you know, like which location, what day of the week.
Yeah, for live poker, you don't stakes, get as much. Yeah, you don't get as much. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, are you talking about, do you input hand data as well? Like hand history?
So you could, right? I mean, this is like the next version. I just met with this one company called, I'm just giving all these free shouts to these guys, but PokerGPT. And PokerGPT.
We're just shielding like
everything. Yeah, I've met with all these companies. Like I'm meeting with founders. I'm open to meet with any founder about what they're doing. So I'm just learning about so many new ideas, because I'm trying to invest in the best companies I can find right now. So I'm talking to founders all the time about what they're doing, what is their vision, what do they want to create, and how can I help? Whether it's an investment, whether it's money, whether it's my friends, whether it's my time, whether it's we take a call once in a while, like I help, you know, you want to reach someone, I make the connection for you. So this guy, PokerGPT, you can put in the hand history into the AI bot and then you talk to it. So you can get the feedback from the hand. It's like a companion. It's like, instead of having for you, Andrew, to text the hand to, it would be you text the hand to the bot.
That's pretty cool.
And the bot can kind of talk to it.
I'll have to try that out.
But I don't know. I'm not really like going that deep with talking to my hand quite yet, but
yeah.
Maybe one day. I don't know. I mean, are you following much of the AI evolution of life or poker or anything
I
like that?
Yeah, I need to get into that way, way more. Mostly, I'm just looking at like dystopian like predictions about AI and stuff.
Yeah, get the good ones. Don't get those ones, Bobby. All they talk about, they promote the worst case scenario oftentimes with a lot of these things. So the things that you see, they're never like, hey, it's going to make it better here. It's more like, well, it's actually going to kill humanity here and you're not going to exist in the state that you're in anymore.
What was that one that the AI that makes videos and there were these puppies playing in the snow? That one looks
Sora.
Awesome. I want to understand that one. Is that one out now?
No, it's a private one, I think, for now. Yeah, they were just flexing and trying to probably drive up the price and raise more money and stuff like that. Get people excited.
One looks sick. Like you can make some really, really cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. Are you worried as a content creator who's, you know, has the position you have in this poker market? Are you worried about AI potentially disrupting what you've built? Or do you feel like you can use AI as an advantage for your channels?
I guess that's a pretty good question. I think right now, you know, things are going so well with the real live footage that I'm pretty focused on that. But when I saw that Sora one or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I immediately thought about like, oh, how could I use this in my own videos? So I haven't really spent a lot of time worrying about whether or not it would negatively affect the channel. But I think there would be some cool ways to implement it and just make videos better in general, though.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Is that something you're concerned about?
Oh no, I'm like, I feel like these AI programs solve all the things I used to dislike about making a lot of content. Because I really like never liked to cut anything down. I love to do a 3-hour show and like, fuck it. Like I want that to be it. But now with the programs, it's so easy to repurpose, to get words out of any video. Like I think it's been game changer for me. It really got me excited to make content again, because I really didn't want to, you know, I just don't like all the all the having to repurpose, which is what you really got to do. And, you know, unless you're, you know, your Scratch is so good, and which, you know, could be depending on the kind of videos you're making. But for what I like to do, I like to show highlights. I like to really like make, you know, I got a complex strategy for how I like to promote things. So I like to use all the platforms together in what I'm doing, which just takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of creative energy too. And then you got to be with your program, and I'm the one, you know, editing it, because that's just what I've always enjoyed doing. You know, I think you've kind of been the same way with a lot of it. So now these AI programs are basically like my coworker, where now instead of me having to do it, I can plug any video in to one of my programs, and it gives me the description of the video, the highlights of the video. I have my prompts I use for every single video when I'm studying on YouTube, where it basically breaks down what are the most important takeaways here, what should I remember, what follow-ups could I research here. So now you can kind of do that for your own content if you want to break down, like, let's say we're talking and I want to, you know, go crazy with it. Now I'm able to repurpose that and make true bangers at a much more efficient rate and quicker. So theoretically, you can do a lot more with that on marketing and on these like multi-channel campaigns that you could do before, but it was a lot of work. You had to have a big team, you know, not to say people couldn't do this kind of stuff. And I feel like those programs have allowed me to build a new strategy. That's why I'm excited to come back.
Nice. Yeah. You know? I mean, I feel like we should just be making UFC videos, and then
I should have kept it up, man. I made that one UFC.
You made two or three, I thought.
Yeah, I made four or five. Yeah, but it was like such an easy format where me talking about the news, like people, yeah, like I was just talking about what's happening. Oh, Khabib he's threatening to leave the UFC if his demand isn't met. And then you post an Instagram of the shot and you just talk about what's happening. You give your opinion.
Do you still have those videos up or no?
Yeah. Yeah, they're still up.
Yeah. That was wild. So what year was that?
2018,
2017. 2018, yeah. So you put up a handful of these UFC videos, and they just, like, one of them got like 30 plus million views. Maybe it's closer to 40 now.
No, I think it was like 26 or 25 million. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah.
My first ever non-poker video.
That's wild.
I know. Imagine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought about that a lot.
I mean, I remember your channel just blew up in terms of subscribers and everything. And then you stopped putting out those UFC videos.
Yeah, like I was always felt kind of weird trying to grind for subs. And now it's a normal thing. You know, everybody's got like these shorts, and everyone's got a lot of subscribers now. So it's not as abnormal to make content specifically to get subscribers, which I never really made content to get subscribers. I made content that I wanted to make that I thought was fun. My strategy is very out of line for YouTube for how you theoretically should be doing it. So now when I come back, I get to decide, do I want to play GTO or do I want to play out of line? So I know how to get a lot of, I mean, it's very straightforward how you get views, how you get subscribers, how you get people talking about any topic that you can report on or talk about, or poker game or whatever, right? Like I could start challenging anybody I want. You know what? I play poker. I'm playing anybody heads up right now. So, you know, it gives you a lot of flexibility when you're thinking about what to do. So if you want to hunt for, you know, that sort of thing, metric, you can. So I'm just deciding what I want to do. How do you think about that? Because I feel like you've got your system set up where for you, you're like a machine with it.
I got super lucky where I almost took my first vlog down as soon as I put it up, like an hour into it. It had 18 views after an hour. And then I was like, I don't even think I want friends and family to actually see this stuff. So
damn,
almost took it down. Luckily, I just kept it up. And then the next day, it started getting like a couple hundred views. Like 2 days later, I had like 200 subscribers. I could just see it, you know, really kind of taking off immediately. And then the first month, I had 100,000 views, I think 3,000 subscribers. And it just did well. I think after a year, I had like 20,000 subscribers. And I never really thought about anything too much in terms of my strategy. I was just like, I like to do this. Like my format's pretty much been the same since I started. It hasn't really changed that
pretty
much.
Yeah.
And luckily people liked the kind of content that I enjoyed making.
Well, they got to follow you from your start when you first started with 8 views to now you're playing some of the biggest high stakes games. You're a co-owner of the lodge. You're one of the first World Poker Tour ambassadors, basically, I think they've really ever had outside of their homegrown team. So you essentially are like, if you look back in the history books, and we talked about this last time, like you're a pioneer in a lot of ways of your style and your strategy. Like you and Andrew were one of the first guys that really came up. Now we've seen a lot more people use the platforms to access the ability to be discovered a lot quicker. Like I'm seeing on Instagram, there's some trend where like a vlogger like just put his face there for like 5 seconds and like put like a quote over it. He's like, oh, they said I couldn't do it, but I, and then it's like a bunch of shots of them playing poker, but I did it. And then they're holding like a trophy and it has like 800K. I'm like, this is not the same world that we were in when even 8 years ago with this whole discovery features of the short form content.
I feel like right now, in some ways, I think content could be a lot tougher. In some ways, it's easy in poker because kind of the formula is out there. So people can just kind of copy it and get to and have a certain level of success. Not that many people really try to differentiate themselves. You know, they do like the tried and true method and copy either me or you know, someone else in the industry. But it would be cool to see a little bit more creativity. It's hard, right? Because it's just like you're showing poker hands and there's not like that.
Well, we've seen it lately, right? Where you had, I think maybe Corey was one of the first people that did it. Corey Irving, he did it where he said, I'm making a bankroll challenge, basically, right? He made a bankroll challenge in a different kind of way, a more degenerate way. And now we've seen guys like Kevin Martin come in. Now he's streaming his whole life. Yeah, I mean, he's like streaming his whole life 24/7.
Yeah.
So it seems like maybe that's a new trend that's emerging where people like package these challenges. You know, it's a bankroll challenge in the day or what? It's the same thing you do every day. But you just have to like give it a title. You have to give it a theme. You have to give it a name. You have to give it a beginning and end. And it seems like a new trend emerging right now.
Those two guys in particular, what they're doing is like really creative. Honestly, I haven't seen Corey's stuff, but I've heard a lot about it. Andrew and I, we just actually had a drink with him like 2 nights ago. And everything that he's kind of told me about his channel and that I've heard from other people, it just seems like crazy. And that's like kind of not really what I wanted to do, where these people were just doing like the most outlandish stuff. You know, Corey's putting his whole bankroll on like bets or whatever.
I don't believe they are. Like, I don't, like Kevin Martin said he's starting from zero. I'm like, wait, bro, you're sponsored he's sponsored by GG Poker. Come on. Like, there ain't no zero. You got like a team of people helping you out. It ain't really zero. I think he maybe addressed something like that too. You know, he's trying to have a good time with it. He's trying to have fun with it. I'm following along. You know, I'm seeing how the guy's going to do. I'm interested. So
what Kevin's doing is one of the biggest, what's the right word? Like, project attempts kind of in poker content.
He's taking a shot, bro. I mean, you gotta
like just to stream yourself 24 hours a day. I think he's on day, I don't want to date this or whatever, but yeah, he's like,
yeah,
you know, he's well into it at this point. I think he's got like $1,000 and he's going to 5K or something. I don't know, man. He's just to it seems like something you might do, actually.
I would have definitely done that when I was younger, 100%. Yeah. Like, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, yeah. When I was younger, I would have locked myself in, which is basically my life anyway. You know, I was playing 24/7, grinding, trying to make it, trying to build my own bankroll challenge. So I wish these guys would do, like, the million to 20 million bankroll challenge, though. I feel like that would be, you know.
Doug has always told me poker's a great way to go from, like, zero to a million, but not a great way to go from a million to like 5 million or a million to 10 million.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
So from going to a million to 20 million, it's hard. There's like, it's just hard to be in situations where you're going to take that much money out of the poker economy unless you're playing
a lot of high stakes games. I mean, you got to be playing, you know, and I want to ask you about this, the new trend we've been seeing with these live high stakes cash games, where now you've got many streams having these regular high stakes games. And if what we've seen through the data is that now there are these arenas emerging where people are winning millions of dollars in these arenas. This is actually not a joke, because you have people winning and losing millions of dollars in a single arena that before it literally didn't exist until they put some cameras on the table to play it. And now people like yourself are always getting invited, I'm sure, to play in any game, right? Everybody's going to want Brad Owen in the game. You know, Celebrity Poker Invitationals, shout out to CPT. You know, they got you in the mix for that great Super Bowl event that we were a part of there. And it seems like the offers are rolling in. I mean, you know, I'm getting a lot of offers for these stream stuff now, too. How are you even approaching that with your position as someone who's going to be invited to any TV game where now you know you got a soft lineup, too?
Yeah. Honestly, it's not really my thing that much. Like, I really love showing up to Bellagio and even some of these like reserved games. It's
what is
kind
that?
Of
what
a
is that
mix.
Mean? Reserved game?
It's like a private game, essentially running in a poker room.
Okay, reserved game. Okay,
that's what they call them now. Like the high stakes games, when you have a lineup that's already set and they'd run their own games like inside Bobby's room or Table One or whatever.
Just asking for the fans who may be wondering what the reserve game is.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense, right? People want to play together. But yeah, go ahead. Can you
The live stream stuff, it just feels like a bit too contrived for me that I don't particularly like all the time. Like the whole reason that I got into making poker vlogs was to show family and friends what my life was actually like as a poker player.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you start just throwing in characters just because they're characters and you start like inserting drama and doing these things with like a fake breast that comes out and
shout out to Sashimi.
Just talking about saying that it's like poker's first reality TV show, but it's all like a bunch of stuff that's all kind of planned and just to create drama. That's like the exact opposite of why I started doing what I was doing. So for me, I think it's great to get a bunch of new people to watch poker and grow the game, but I'm not personally inclined to do that stuff because it doesn't really feel authentic to my like poker career or like anyone's. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to be a personality to get invited to these games. And so the opportunities are great, but it just seems, I don't know, not quite 100% for me.
I mean you're definitely a different kind of personality than most of the new creators. I gotta say, you're very different than most of the new creators. These new creators, they're like content creators.
Yeah,
you are always a poker player in my mind, to me.
Yeah,
right? I would argue you are a great content creator too, but
yeah, no,
your personality is more very reserved, like kind of laid back, pretty chill. And some people may have even used that to your detriment and say, well, he's not this loud in your face guy, like, well, how does he have 700,000 people watching him? But I think that you represent a very like a person that a lot of people are just chill. That's what they like. They like a chill person.
And I think that's why I'm not good on stream, because I'm not really like interested in just doing a bunch of crazy shit just to it. And I feel like there's pressure to do that. And so when I do that and it goes wrong, I'm like even more frustrated with myself because I'm like, oh, I did this just to try to cater to this live stream to keep the people who are watching live like entertained. And then when it goes wrong, it's just like super even more tilting because I'm like, I didn't even do that for me. I did that for these other people.
Right.
Whereas like when I'm filming for a vlog or playing a session for a vlog, I don't feel any pressure to, or I don't feel as much pressure. Sometimes you'll have a session that's like pretty boring and I'm like, fuck, I came into this knowing I was going to film today. So maybe I have like something that's like borderline 3-bet or call, and maybe I just 3-bet just to ramp up the variance a little bit. But on a live stream, sometimes you have thousands of people or sometimes like 10,000 or more that are just waiting for anything to happen, you know?
Waiting to roast you.
At like VPIPs and all this shit that like doesn't matter in a normal cash game session, but it does in these live streams. And that external stuff, I don't really love all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to that high stakes game at the Lodge last year when I went down there for the opening and you were playing those high stakes games. And yeah, I mean, it definitely, you could tell, right? What you just described, what is what we saw on screen during that.
Yeah. Well, so the Lodge is always, I feel like even a little bit more pressure because we're part owners there. And so that week, I think I had lost like 10 sessions in a row, which is like the most I had ever lost right before we started doing these streams at the Lodge. And the first day, it was a crazy day where I think we were supposed to play 25-50, but it was like we had the straddle up to like 6,400 or something. We were playing the Nick game for like 2K a person.
Yeah, it was getting out of
line. And I won 3 hands the entire session. So it was our stream debut. And, you know, I wasn't really in the mindset going into it to play high stakes. And the game ended up being much bigger than I thought. So I sold like 30% of myself. And then I had a cap at like 100K loss. And I ended up losing like 150K. So it was just like that extra 50K was like 100% on me. So I don't know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's even worse. Oh, my God.
Like, such a...
Do you feel like you got a better grasp of the mental strain playing on those stakes and maybe understanding what positions you thrive in order to put yourself in those positions more often?
Yeah, I mean the things that I thrive in are just a normal cash game inside a casino.
not a stream. Everyone's watching.
It's just different when you're like on the flyer for the stream, you know. So yeah. People are tuning in specifically to watch you, and if you're not getting involved in a hand, or if you're not trying to pull off some kind of wild bluff, yeah. People, I feel like I'm letting them down. So then I try to do that stuff, and then everybody's just trying to out crazy everybody.
Yeah, so it's chaos.
Yeah, I mean, you saw that stream, and it's super entertaining when there's like 500, 700K pots and stuff that Doug's getting involved in. But it's just, I personally can't stomach these like mid six figure swings. That's just not something that I'm at the level at right now. And Doug can, because, you know, he's in a different spot financially for one thing, but also he just kind of embraces like that variance more.
He's used to it. I mean, he's had a lot of those high stakes swings playing some of the highest stakes heads up cash games and six max games. So he's used to having swings where, you know, to him, 300K, you know, not one say nothing, but it's something that he's done plenty of times and he's going to do plenty more times in his mind. So I think he's able to process that. And that's what the difference between high stakes players sometimes is that, you know, it's kind of the same game, but a certain player can handle losing this amount. But once they go past that amount, they just have some sort of breakdown. Everybody has that point. Some people that can make it up to the highest stakes and be able to win, they're just wired differently to be able to handle those swings. And I feel like Doug is, you know, the reason why he has had the success he's had is because he's been able to master his emotion somehow and dealing with that and reframe it. So
yeah,
it's impressive. I mean, listen, I see him down there playing. He's one of the biggest winners in the show.
I think he might be the biggest winner, but people see him, you know, there's these clips that we put out on the Lodge's social media where he's just, you know, blasting away with like ace four suited or whatever it was against Alex, and
whoops.
And it looks like he's just, you know, just getting completely nuts. But yeah, there's a method to it, and it's good marketing for him.
Yeah, I, you know, talking about the CBT event, I just mentioned that. So CBT event, kind of Celebrity Poker Tour. I got in touch with them maybe in December, kind of figured out more about what they did. I got on my radar last year, and they put together this in like kind of like online personality event with a bunch of creators who never play poker. And I was like, that's basically the kind of ideas poker really needs right now in order to get outside of the industry, get outside of the normal, you know, poker sphere. We got a bunch of poker shows, we got poker vloggers, we got poker media, but we don't really have a lot of these outside personalities playing as much outside of the creator games, which creator games had a lot of success. And I feel like they really helped grow poker. So I got in touch working with them on their last event, and we got you in the mix there as well. It seemed like you were on three poker players in that game, but you were playing with NFL players. You're playing with a bunch of NFL players actually for the Super Bowl event. What was your experience like in the mix at the Celebrity Poker Tour event for Super Bowl weekend?
It was just really funny. You know, everybody's all dressed up like nicely and in some cool gear, and I'm just, you know, some kind of poker guy in a hoodie.
I'll put a photo of our outfit selection.
I mean,
right
it
now.
really looked like a red carpet event almost, or something, or like an MTV Music Awards type of thing, where you have all these cool celebrities who are like really stylish and a lot of really interesting personalities. A couple of them, it was fun, you know, came up and said, "Hey, man, I watch your vlog." It's
really
like, I'm a football player. And I'm like, oh, yeah,
that's cool,
man. So, yeah. And then there were a couple of other YouTube guys that watched the channel and reached out, Bryce Hall and Tommy. And yeah, so it was cool. A couple of them I'd met before also. So it was good to reconnect. This guy, MJ Melendez, who's on the Royals. One time when I was in Scottsdale, like, I want to say about 5 years ago, he was at spring training in Scottsdale with the Royals, and we met at that point, and I hadn't seen him since, but he said that he watched the channel, and now, you know, he's doing some pretty big things with the Royals. So it's fun to follow his career, and it was fun to play poker with them because they're just doing like wild stuff. But
were they any good? I mean, were you impressed? Or
the Calais Campbell, I thought he was the one who I played with who impressed me the most. He's good, but most of them, like a handful of them, had played little to no poker before, so they were learning a lot of things on the fly. And it's a fast structure, so it kind of neutralizes any kind of big skill edge,
right?
But everybody was just having a lot of fun. There were a lot of drinks and
everybody, a lot of drinks, a lot of good time. Like you said, they're very, you know, the team that put that on, Enclave and Key is the name of their company. They come from a very hospitality-based world, yeah, service-based world, the casino world in Vegas. So their goal with that event is to give the players this beautiful experience, partnerships, sponsors there, giving out free items, put people together in a room and let some nice content be made. So I thought that was a good opportunity for you to kind of get more into working with the non-poker audience, yeah, and then help maybe get some more exposure down that way. And it seemed like you liked it because you're coming back for the next event, which is going to be on, I think, the 15th. So this should be out before the 15th.
Yeah.
Single table event.
I'm a huge sports fan, so I really have a lot of kind of admiration for athletes. And when I'm around them, I just kind of get excited and it's really fun for me. And mm-hmm. I'm not really in that opportunity where I get to just be in a room with, you know, all these people that are kind of big in their own industry. So that was pretty awesome.
It's exciting.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah. It was a way different energy in the air. And it was hilarious to see some of the stuff that people were doing. And that's the thing is, like, these guys are doing such crazy outlandish stuff all the time. And there's so many of them that they're the ones that are going to kind of build up these enormous stacks almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, you're having the child this week and, you know, that's going to be a very monumental moment, obviously, for your life. How do you envision balancing the opportunities, the card room, the content, the cash games, the tournaments, the fans? How do you envision balancing all that?
It is pretty tough to balance all that stuff between the traveling and, like you said, yeah, I mean, there's so many things going on right now, but I want to be, it's hard because, like, you just never know how long this stuff is going to last for, how long people are going to be interested in the YouTube channel and all that. So it's hard to not kind of seize, like, every opportunity while they're available. But also I want to be present as a dad. So balancing that is pretty tough. But luckily, my partner, Amber, she's amazing and she's, like, really understanding. Yeah, we're going to have the baby. And then a couple of days later, she's like, yeah, you should go play this CPT event or whatever. And then she gave me the green light to go to the lodge for the lodge championship series and a couple other things. So, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm there and that she doesn't get stressed out, but, like, I'm trying to provide for all of us and our two stepdaughters, or my two stepdaughters, her two daughters. So it is a lot. And I don't even, like, put the family stuff, you know, on the vlog or talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's always kind of a lot going on in the house, man.
Always. And like you said, I mean, you bring up a good point, which is that, and we could argue this is why you're getting these opportunities now, is you have seized that moment. You haven't let up. You have been locked in. You've been performing at the cash games. You've been performing on these different opportunities you've been getting. And as you said, right now, you don't want to let it up. I guess the only downside is that once it's always going to be there. You're always going to get more opportunity. You're always going to be able to scale your stakes or scale your opportunity or to scale your business or your investments. And, you know, that becomes on, like, a personal option. And now, you know, you're in a position where, like you said, if you lay off the brake or if you lay off the gas, then who knows if this position's ever going to be there again, you know? And I think it's relatable for anyone who's had a lot of success at what they're doing, you know? At what point do we say we've had that success and maybe we do something else?
Yeah, that's the good thing about the lodge and just kind of expanding my horizons and having equity in different companies, because that way, you know, ideally these companies are making money for us where we don't have to be there putting in the hours in order for it to be successful all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends what business you have equity in. If you're getting a payout as a shareholder, if you're getting a dividend, or, you know, some companies are just reinvesting all the money back in. So
that's
what
the lodge is doing. A lot of people think, oh, okay, well, if Brad loses 10,000, 20,000, why should I care? Because he's just making all this money from the lodge. And that's not the case at all. You know, I love being a part of it, but our goal is to, you know, expand and make that property and future properties as good as possible. So we're not taking any money out of it for
a while. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, obviously when you have equity, when you're an investor in a company, you're betting on that equity increasing some multiple percentage, you know, whether in this case, we don't really know, you know, what the valuation is. So if you say a 10 million valuation, if you're going to be able to get it to 100 million valuation, you got to really think about how we're going to do that. We got to have big social media channels. We got to have more rooms. We got to have a bigger database. We got to have these certain characteristics, certain revenues, certain numbers that have to match up. And even then, and that's the best case scenario, right? You're 10x and you're the investing world, depending on how much you own and how you structure those deals, it's not really what it appears to be.
Yeah.
When you think about, oh, this guy owned a card room,
Yeah. Luckily, Doug is really, really sharp with so much of this stuff. And he puts in so much effort that people just don't see.
He's a machine.
Just going all over the state and doing research and all these different legal things and city ordinances and all that stuff. And he with Mike Brady and a handful of other people.
Shout out Jake. I know Jake out there grinding.
We just have such a awesome team that I feel really good, or as good as I could, about kind of the future of the lodge and all the card rooms that we're hopefully going to open up mm-hmm. In the upcoming future, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? I had Doug on the show last week, and he talked about expansion and bringing the lodge to different locations, and makes so much sense, right? What do we want to do as a poker player? We want to be able to play in a comfortable environment with a fair rake, with good security, with people that we think care about us and have our best interest at heart. And it's not always that easy to find. And I feel like you guys are trying to provide that for the customers down there at the lodge. Whether it's true or not at the end of the day, who knows? But from my vantage point, it appears that way. And I think that we need more of that in poker. We need people that have our interest out. The players have the interest of the players, not the interest of how do we take all these guys' money and,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's $11 an hour at the lodge. So it's tough to beat that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so we got the lodge, obviously lodge been going well. You've been kind of playing on some streams. I feel like you haven't been playing that many shows though. What's been your approach with playing on the stream at the lodge?
When I'm in town, I play. I think I was there in January for 2 weeks. I played 2 or 3 times on the stream.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were doing some tournaments while I was there as well. And I did, so I played at least 3 times because I did play one tournament.
Yeah, I see you post on your story a lot. You always go down there and put in the work. you're not getting barbecue that much. You're grinding.
Yeah, when I went there in January, I played 12 or 13 days straight. I try to make the most of my time when I'm out there. And it's just cool. There's a lot of people that come in from all over, whether it's different parts of Texas or some people see that I'm there and they'll fly in from other states or Canada or whatever. So
how's that feel when you have these fans who are coming from Canada? They're coming from Canada to your card room in Round Rock off the freeway. They come in there to hang out with you and see you and play with you. How does that feel?
It's cool. Yeah, so today we'll get into this story. This isn't specific to the lodge, but it's just kind of how I approach it. Where there was this guy I met after my session at Bellagio. I lost 24K today. I won 25K yesterday in the big game in Bellagio, but I lost almost all of it back today. So I was feeling pretty low. It was my biggest loss ever at Bellagio. But there was this guy who, I think that I saw him kind of peeking through the glass and stuff in Bobby's room, and you kind of get the sense that they're a viewer or whatever. So as I'm on my way out, he starts telling me how he teaches college students and somehow he uses my vlogs to teach them how to have healthy vices or something like that. It was really interesting. I don't know. But he brought up this picture of him and 7 or 8 students. They were all wearing "There's No Right Way to Play Jiggity" shirt. So shout out to those guys. But yeah, these people, they might have 30 seconds or a minute to spend with you, and they may never meet you or see you ever again. So even though I lost 24,000 today, just wanted to try to make that interaction as good as I could,
Mm-hmm.
So I personally wasn't feeling very good, but you try to smile, always happy to take a photo and do that stuff. Cause I just want people to not feel like they were let down in that one moment.
Right. Cause that's the only time that they're going to see you.
Yeah.
Only time they're going to meet you. I try to be that same way when I meet people. I know that they come up and you're like, hey, I'm like, oh, okay. All right. You gotta be nice. You gotta be respectful. I'm trying to treat people. I want to be treated how I want other people to treat me.
Yeah.
So, and obviously, if you're not in that good mood, they're going to remember that. Oh, Brad was he was so rude. And even though you're like, hey, I just, even though you in your mind, I just lost 25K. I'm ready to take a walk and clear my head a little bit. And then you have somebody who it's their moment to see you. So you got to make a decision. And I feel like your fans really appreciate that too. You know, I feel like that doesn't go unrecognized out of your community.
Yeah, I have a bunch of photos of me. I went to the Heads Up Championship in like 2009. I think it was like March or something like that. Maybe it was 2010. And I remember taking pictures with like Dennis Phillips and Moneymaker and Scotty Wynn. Like that was me, man. I loved taking photos. I was just such a big poker fan at that time.
Yeah.
And meeting those guys and having those moments with them was something that was really special for me. So I just try to remember that when I'm able to, like, you know, pay it back, I guess.
Yeah. How does that feel when, you know, you think about the fan you were who was looking up to the poker players, and now you're one of the main guys who fans are coming to look up to and to, you know, whatever, right? I mean, a whole bunch of range of emotions.
It's a little bit, it's weird for me because the guys that I looked up to all won stuff. And I've like,
well, you won YouTube.
Yeah, but
that's a pretty big thing to, well, you know, you won the cash games, you've been playing a lot of different cash games over the years, like you said, moving at different stakes. Like that matters to me.
The guys that I look up to are still like the guys that crush. You know, I was talking about Kuhn and Petrangelo and those guys. Like I still really look up to those guys and have so much respect for them and what they've been able to accomplish. And I've had some tournament success and, you know, I've had a lot of cash game success and everything, but I guess until I start really winning a lot of things, I'm always going to feel like it's weird. Like they like me for what I've been able to do on YouTube, but I wish I was able to have that success in poker tournaments, probably.
Poker tournaments. Yeah. Like, well,
that's the cool stuff for me. Like, and the poker players that I look up to are all like the stud guys.
Yeah. So you mentioned, obviously, we talked earlier about the, you know, family and now balancing and adjusting. And you mentioned some events you're going to play. And I know WPT, they got the upcoming voyage going on, which I don't think you're able to make it due to your family. But what's your thoughts on WPT? In my opinion, taking a pretty big swing here. They rented out the entire Virgin Voyage boat and they are going to have cash games there. They're going to have tournaments there. They told me that on the boat, free food on the boat, there's parties on the boat, there's performances on the boat. It looks pretty sick. Like I'm not a cruise guy. You know, Herman, she's been pitching me on the cruise since last June. Poppy, we need you on the cruise, Poppy. We need you on the cruise. I just don't understand it. But what are your thoughts about the voyage, the cruise? It looks like a pretty aggressive swing from a company, World Poker Tour.
Andrew and I, we went on this on the ship a year and a half ago. It was just kind of like a trial run. And I think they had 90 cabins set aside for WPT people or whatever. And so this is the first time they're doing it with the full ship. So this is going to be it's just going to be insane. And I wish I could go on it, but yeah, I've got the baby due in a couple of days, in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So being kind of like on a ship and not being able to get back home in case there was some kind of an emergency or something.
Yeah, seven days.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about the moves WPT's making? I mean, I feel like this voyage is, it's like, it's aggressive because they launched the championship event. That went extremely well, in my opinion, right? Really established itself as that December event series. And now something that I know every year I'm looking forward to going there already. So, but now they're launching the voyage, which is a couple months after that. It's like they want to call it like the spring break. And I think it's a crazy play. I mean, not to say, you know, it's aggressive.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of downtime in between the World Championship and the Voyage stuff. And it's just kind of a different vibe. You know, I mean, you're going to these very exotic locations and it's just a different feel on a ship and it's all poker players.
What are they?
I think it's going to get pretty out of line.
What are the
Andrew thinks it's going to get really out of line.
These cash games are going to be some of the softest games ever because everyone's going to be
And the cool thing about this is that they're really doing it with kind of the players in mind. You know, I think, I don't really want to get any of the details wrong, but just with,
I know a lot of them now. But
do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
doing a deep dive.
The rake
right now
is like a lot less than you would normally see on any type of a cruise. And, you know, there's a 5K main event to get your name on the Mike Sexton Champions Cup. I mean, that's pretty cool to have that opportunity. I'm curious to see who ends up playing the 25K. I think that'll get a lot of like interesting poker personalities. And yeah, I'm just kind of excited to see how it goes.
Yeah. What's
the party? the party stuff is something that I'm excited to see videos of. I just feel like people are going to be getting hammered and then playing big cash games, and you know, maybe it'll be.
Rob Young told me he got a game going on, so he let me know they got motion down there. So
oh yeah,
that's what he said. He's like, yeah, you going? I said, I said I'm going to figure out my living situation. Maybe I'm still on the fence to be on that boat. I still might be on that boat, but
you should go. I feel like it'll be a really cool experience. And when I went, the food is really good. The locations were cool. Yeah. I mean, I really want to, like I said, like I want to win a major tournament. So every time I miss an opportunity to play one of these like WPT mains, it kind of like
the ones you should play. I know. Right. I mean, if you're going to play any, those are like the ones to play. What's it been like working with WPT? It's getting on, you know, it's kind of time's been adding up. I think how long you been with them officially?
Almost 2 years.
So what's it been like working with the World Poker Tour?
For me, I loved it. I feel like WPT has kind of the biggest upside, and it's already, in my opinion, better than WSOP stuff. WSOP is so fun in the summer. Everybody comes out, but they're really doing a lot of stuff to like liquidate kind of their value of bracelets. I mean, I don't even know how many bracelets they have. Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about that, but I just feel like WPT is really trying to push the envelope and do really cool things. I mean, you have a $40 million guarantee in December, but yeah, I feel like we should talk about the WPT World Championship a little bit more, just because like that is my favorite festival, is what they call it.
Yeah, I love
just
it.
Like at the Wynn, you have just everything is so nice at the Wynn. You just can't really beat that property. And then Matt Savage does a really good job, and
the entire team. I mean, I feel like the Wynn team, you know, the Wynn is my preferred place. So I had my first event during one of the championship series there. That casino specifically is very hospitable. They're very service focused. They're very experience focused, and they want to give everybody a good time, and they hire people who have that mission too. And you see that in the poker room. That's why I played so much there. Like they treat you well. They're dealers are good. They try to have a certain quality level. And I feel like that's why the partnership with WPT makes so much sense to me, because WPT, I've been getting to know them, you know, following Adam Pliska on social media. I feel like you learn a lot about people on Instagram. You know, you see what at least they want to portray, their public perception they want to portray. And it starts with your leaders, man. And you need a good leader at the top. And that guy, I love that guy, man. He's a guy that I think he really tries to put his team on, tries to, you know, elevate from within, and tries to build a certain culture of excellence and achievement and a certain quality of work that we often don't see in poker. I feel like there are some other people that are taking that approach now that I have a lot of respect for too. And, you know, you can see that in terms of the output. They created this event out of nowhere in December, and all of a sudden now it has $38 million prize pool for the second year. I mean, it's pretty impressive, right? You know, with all the side events that go on around it, and basically just make up an entire new part of the poker calendar.
Yeah, it's something that it's just a team that I'm really proud to be a part of. And Adam does crush it, and he takes everything in stride, you know.
He seemed like he have a good time. That's what I like about him. He seemed like he likes to have a good time. You know, he go into a safari, he dressing up in costumes, but then when the event happens, he's in the suit, he's locked in, he's a professional guy. You know, he's got that whole corporate background experience where that's kind of how he was.
He's been with WPT since day one, I believe.
So.
He started as a lawyer for WPT, and you know,
I think he said he was going to the White House or something like that.
He was going to work in law or in one of those,
that whole political world.
Oh, really?
And then he got it with the World Poker Tour, and now he's been living the life since then for 20 some years, man. What are your fans called? The Brad Cyples or what?
No, there's nothing.
your fan? No, let's give him a name. What about it? What do you think about
a
name?
I don't know.
What do you guys think about a name for the Brad's fans?
I feel like people have tried to do this before, and
the Brad Eiples, the Brad Cyples.
Sounds bad.
I'm just throwing things out there. What about I could see that.
Yeah. But yeah, you've been partying a lot. Are we able to talk about your personal life at all?
Yeah, if you want, go ahead.
So you're single now again.
Single now. I was dating a girl for a while. I think
she's nice.
She's wonderful. She's beautiful. She's sweet. She's loving. You know, it was either we really had a family or we went our separate ways.
So is that something that's important to you at some point to have a family?
I would say before her, it wasn't important. I never thought much about it. I kind of just like my poker playing kamikaze lifestyle. You know, I've never really taken this stuff too seriously. You know, I moved to Vegas 8 years ago, and I'd say when I lived here, I kind of put myself into relationships. I really wasn't focused on content that much or poker that much. And I just really was comfortable in the kind of cycle that I built for my life. And up until recently, until I met her, she put in the idea in my head of, why don't you have a kid? Why don't you have bloodline? Why don't you have that? And I was like,
bloodline.
I use that word, but you know, she really didn't. But I used the word. I was like, yeah, I want the best blow at the best bloodline.
It's like, it's a Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm thinking, right? I'm like, how do I get the banking bloodline, you know? But yeah, I would say before that I wasn't, but now I'm open to it with the right person.
How old are you?
38.
38. Yeah. I mean, so you have so many things kind of in like ducks in a row, right? Like you're well established in this industry and you can, like, the biggest thing for me is being able to financially take care of another human, which is a pretty big thing
task
to take on.
Yeah. Well, I would say for me, I wanted to make sure I had the right partnerships in place on the finance side.
Yeah.
In terms of who I'm working with behind the scenes and the companies I'm working with publicly, because for me, you know, there really aren't many companies you're going to work with that are going to pay you a lot of money in poker unless it's a poker gaming site, like a WPT, a GG Poker, ACR, or something that they're making rake fees. Those are the people that are really going to be able to give you big deals because you're able to, and then they give you big deals because you're making their company money by sending your players there. And I feel like for me, if I'm going to send someone there, I want to be able to play in America, which in America, there's only a couple options. And then, you know, I just haven't found that right fit. Like, I mean, there's training site options. I'm talking with GTO Wizard right now. We're about to close something out with them. But besides that, I just don't see that company that I feel like is going to get me to the point of upgrading my business unless it's maybe one of three or one of five. So right now, I'm basically just waiting to get that in motion before I decide, you know, because I don't think my finances are in a position once I start really studying how it works. You know, I never really went that deep on it, but now I'm deep on it and I'm like,
yeah,
I'm getting more into the investor mindset.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point where it's just like, really, there's so few kind of brand ambassador roles now compared to how many there used to be. There were just so many red pros on Full Tilt that you're just like, who the fuck are these guys? At least I felt like mm-hmm. that. Like, I remember, yeah, I guess I don't really want to say, but I remember playing at Red Rock with like some guy who's a Full Tilt red pro. And I was like, I've never, like, how did you get that deal?
Yeah. I mean, back in the day they were handing them out and, you know, it was a place you could play in America. And I really want to promote something that my fans can play. And I got a lot of fans all over the world, but most of the Legion is in America.
You got to be with these companies there were a lot of companies that reached out to Andrew and I before we signed with WPT. And they just didn't really quite seem like the right fit where there were different ones where we could have made a ton of money and probably like way, you know, probably a lot more money, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you just have to be selective.
It's scary, bro, because you don't know these people. You don't know what they're doing to the software. You don't know what they're doing to your customers that you're sending them. And you have to put your faith that these casino operators are going to be treating your fans with care and love and respect. And, you know, I've been in Vegas now for a while and I don't think that's what's happening with most of these people. So for me, I'm sort of saying, like, I've been taking deep dives in casino world because I really want to get into the casino world. I want to invest in casinos. And, you know, I would say poker is a priority, but the general casino itself is more of a priority for me now. And I've been learning about the mindset of casino operators and casino executives. And it's not like, maybe some people think that way, but I don't think most people are going to think about like that. How maybe me and you think about what we're promoting to our fans, what we're promoting to our audiences. So for me, for better or worse, I take that shit way too seriously. And I'd rather, you know, I say, like, I'd rather just have to do something else in my life than have to get to that point where that's what I feel like I got to be doing. Yeah, I want to have a Vegas card room casino. I want to have the Legion casino. I want to have the Legion poker room.
It just seems so hard to get.
So it makes it
up and running.
So it makes it fun. What's my eye?
I mean, would this be somewhere like right off the strip or on the strip? Or what do you envision with this?
Bro, I envision it in where, you know, Bellagio is. That's yeah. Where I envision it, right at the Bellagio.
Okay.
Right in the middle of the strip, you know, whether it's in with a partnership with an existing company, whether it's, you know, because Eric Person basically just did the same thing where he's bringing Maverick Gaming into partnership with Bally's, and he's going to have Maverick Gaming rooms or Maverick Gaming, some sort of, you know, representation with his room inside of that property. So I don't see why some properties here wouldn't want to do that, because every poker room needs help. And most of these casinos, if they understood the power of poker marketing, like, you understand it, right? your life has been changed forever. And your family's life potentially is changed forever because of poker content. Mm-hmm. So think of how power, like people like don't really understand it. And I know how they don't understand it because I don't see anybody talking about this. And now with this poker marketing, you're able to create so much content, so many impressions and promotion for your company and so many opportunities for influencer marketing with essentially anybody that's kind of interested in poker that you can bring all those people to your room, to your property. And I don't think enough people realize that because they don't really understand poker. But once a Vegas casino embraces it, no one's embraced it yet. Once they embrace it, we're going to see a change. And Venetian might be the first one. So we'll see.
Are you talking with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met with them. Oh, yeah.
That's yeah. pretty big, especially since they, you know, they historically haven't been, they don't have the best track record with the poker community.
Well,
so maybe you can help turn that around.
He's Tommy's a new ownership. I already researched the new owners. You research them yourself. Apollo Capital Management. These are different kind of, these are private equity groups. So their goal is to raise the evaluation and sell it for more in a few years. So private equity strategies are usually like a certain year interval time, like 5 to 8 years, something like that.
And they're just taking over the poker.
They invested $1 billion into the properties, and they are shifting the poker room from downstairs to the second floor. So that prime real estate, I mean, it has prime real estate down there for slot machines. And if you do square foot by profit or something like that, like there's some calculation the casinos have where, you know, clearly you should probably have your most profitable machines right there by the door and people walk in. You want them to walk into poker, you want them to walk into the slots. So, but they still want to keep the poker room. So they're building an entire new poker room upstairs, second floor. It's like the connection from Palazzo to the Venetian inside of the mall. And inside that, they want to build a screen room.
Is it like next to the food court in there?
No, the food court's a little bit down more. It's right by Sushi Samba. It's right by the karaoke place.
Okay.
It used to be this barbecue place that was underrated. I don't think a lot of people went there, but they're taking all that space out and putting in a big poker room, putting in a lot of cash games, putting in a lot of tournament tables, and then having a place for creators and having a place for streams.
All right. That should be pretty cool then.
Could be, but they need the right people.
You're the right people.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I want to be the guy building it all and doing it all. I was like, man, this is what an opportunity. This is pretty sick opportunity because I've known Tommy for a long time. He runs that room there and he's always been, he seems like he loves this shit.
Yeah.
He's so focused. He takes so much pride in having like a real beautiful tournament series at the Venetian and having a great room. And I know he wants to do that well. And they're investing a lot of money in this new room. So he's got to do well. Like they don't have a choice. They got to perform. Otherwise, someone's got to answer for it. It's going to be him, right? He's the guy leading the room. He's got to make sure that this is a banger if they're going to invest all this money in a new room. So I think they're motivated. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like the right group to work with because they got money to invest a casual billion into the property. Well, what if they go, hey, I mean, I like this. Here's $100 million. Like, it's not to say it's not that unrealistic if they see an ROI for selling that asset for more money in the future. So
hopefully I'm always kind of rooting for poker projects to go well, but there's just been a handful of things about that property in particular that have been frustrating. Like they didn't pay the guarantee.
Yeah.
You know, they historically basically did everything they could to get online poker.
Well, that's because the last ownership, right? And you could argue a lot of those people are still in position of power there and they're still executives and they're still maybe culture.
They didn't allow vlogging or like even pictures. They were like the hardest on any kind of poker content stuff. So it seems
that's
like
that's all done now.
Yeah. So that'll be, I mean, I'm glad to see that, but
You got PTSD. I see. It's like when if Poker Star's got new owners and came in and made all these promises, you'd say, I mean, like, see it first. Okay. Like, let me.
Yeah. I'm going to kind of see. I hope they do well. I hope they treat the poker community well and then kind of go from there.
Yeah. I like your more reserved thought process on it because I'm obviously excited because, you know, I'm in like investment mode. So that means you always got a bright vision for the future when you're thinking about it as an investor. You're looking at what's the best case scenario. If I invest in this room, what's the best case scenario for that stream? Well, it's the biggest stream on the planet in the middle of the Las Vegas Strip with some of the biggest games that ever happened in Vegas.
I think it's so hard to... What kind of viewership is 52 getting?
I don't think they're doing much live anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think they're... I think they're more recording. They're putting stuff on CBS Sports.
Oh, really?
They're not doing much live content right now.
Oh, okay.
They're using a different strategy. I think they're inviting a lot of people over there to make content for their channels. So they make content for their channels. They make content for CBS Sports, maybe a special occasion live stream, but they're looking to do events. They're looking to do more live streams. But you know, it's hard to get consistent games. It's hard to build up that momentum. You need like a big room. You need a lot of people. You need a lot of support. You need a lot of things going your way.
Yeah, it just seems like there's a good amount of streams now. I remember
so many.
There were going to be, you know, I don't even know how many there were supposed to be in Vegas, but like someone was telling me about like 3 or 4 that were like coming out here, and the Venetian one is one that I, you know, just heard about in the last week or 2 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see how many streams Las Vegas can support. Like right now, all these high stakes, there's like competing high stakes games basically in Vegas. There's like 3 of them, you know.
Yeah.
There's Table One, you have Bobby's Room, and then you have the Win, and they're all fighting for players. It's just tough to find people who are willing to play like really, really big games and to keep it sustainable. And then
yeah, sending this to the Venetian, they're gonna know they gotta have a budget now, because that's what I mean. Like now you gotta agree. Well, then now what do you do? That's when you need a budget. That's when you need a better strategy. That's when you need to give players an experience. You need to start spending some money and investing it on relationships with these people, which is kind of what those games do. You know, those games are building their relationships in different ways. Maybe they're taking them to Carbone. Maybe they're taking them to the hockey game. You know, if you're at the Win, maybe we all go out to SW. Maybe we all get a table at XS. You know, maybe we get you a suite upstairs. And, you know, certain people are in a suite having a good time with you. So you are utilizing the resources and assets you have around the game to provide. That's the competition, right? That's in my opinion, what makes it great. Like, I love that. I love it when there are people competing for this, for that. You know, it ain't always fair and it don't always make you happy. But, you know, things like that really push things forward as well, too, in my opinion. Not to say, you know, for better or worse.
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think I hope they really like cater to the players and offer something that's really cool to keep players coming back and play on the streams. But
I'm with you. I mean, I see what you're saying, right? There are so many streams.
Like they're like even
too many.
Yeah. And you have to compete with like the regular high stakes games that are running in Vegas, you know.
True. Yeah. If you try to do a high stakes stream, then, you know, you got to pull. You assume your regulars are going to be pulled from these other games. So you got to get them out of that game. I mean, if the game's good, then why would they want to leave?
Yeah. I think it's just not that big of a player pool. Like even some of these games, like Bobby's Room, like this guy, he flies in like every couple of days from Southern California and stuff. It's just, I don't know. It's just not that many people are willing to play that big.
Yeah, that's going to be that's what I tell every, you know, every room, is that your ability to secure those players and have a strategy to secure those players is a big part of the challenge. And it seemed like the Lodge has done pretty great at that with Doug. Yeah. And Doug's been able to really, you know, Skull Mike's been able to do those things. And I'm sure everyone pitches in down there.
Yeah.
It's like more, it seemed like a community effort down there where everyone's trying to make the best games.
Yeah. Skull Mike does a really good job with the lineups. And obviously Doug has a bunch of connections, but I think LA, you know, LA is great because the population is so big and there's so many poker players out there. LA is really like, you know, I don't know how many of the top 10 biggest rooms are in the Los Angeles area, but it seems like almost half of them have to be like,
yeah,
Commerce, Gardens, you know, all those places. Hustlers big. They have a lot of, anyway, there's just like a lot of people that have a lot of disposable income. So their player pool to play like these high stakes streams games,
massive,
is a lot.
There's so many games there, yeah. Underground, overground. Now they got the second live stream. Commerce just launched out there with Bally's, and
there's a lot. Yes, Lynn G just invited me to play the Commerce.
Yeah, she texted me too. Yeah, she was like, oh, you want to come play? I'm like, I'm not going to LA for a bit, but
yeah,
she's trying. I mean, listen, that's what you takes. It takes a girl like Lynn G to say, hey, I'm gonna go through my network of people and say, how do I get them here to play in these games? Because that's what they need. They need people that can build the games. Everyone's got a game builder. Every stream needs a game builder. So you got to have it. And that's a gift. Not everybody's got that gift. Not everybody's got the ability to wrangle these psychotic, wealthy people that to play high stakes poker on a stream. It ain't that easy.
And it's just, there's a lot of last minute cancellations. It's kind of like an art that goes into just cultivating any high stakes game, but particularly on stream, because a lot of people commit and then they're just like, oh yeah, my, you know, so and so got sick,
car got gas in it.
Yeah, they come up with every excuse in the book
to not
play, but really it's like, yeah, I just don't want to, you know, I thought this sounded like a fun idea, and usually they want to help out whoever's putting the game together, but then once they start getting cold feet and they're like, do I really want to play high stakes? Do I really want to put out like everything that I do in the universe and have people see how I play high stakes, all those kind of things. Do I want to lose six figures in front of thousands of people. And then with all the views that it gets on social media and YouTube clips,
clip
and
about me,
like
how
that.
I'm a fish that I lost 100. Well, you sell them the other way. Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't play much on the stream because I played on stream before and it's not always fun. So
yeah, but you stressful. Do, you know, you're a great commentary guy and do the
love commentary
fireside chats and stuff at the lodge, which is fun.
Well, that actually, you know, it leveled me up into doing the fire, the Hustler game chats. And then I did an actual fireside chat at a conference.
Oh yeah,
where I interviewed the head of blockchain at Microsoft.
Yeah, you're great at that stuff.
I love the interviews. The
well, you were doing that stuff for the Creator Game and all that, the Hustler.
I forgot about
that.
That
was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are your goals now for poker content? And then do you have any poker goals? Or is it just content?
Poker goals. I mean, my goal is to be a god of the game, a god of hold'em right now, a god of two card, and then also, you know, in the process, my four card getting a lot better. Just understanding, working with my coaches, working with the best tools. So I'd say my goals are more investment focused to be the best investor on the planet. I look at a Warren Buffett as an inspiration for me to be one of the best investors. And I know it's a very long game, and obviously, you know, that sounds unrealistic to people, but that's my goal. So I would say that I want to be great at poker. I want to be positioned to be playing any poker game and do well with content. My goal is to make some of the best content of all time, the best shows of all time, have conversations that are really high quality for people that really listen to them, and kind of merge all that together. So it's not necessarily with numbers or metrics. It's more of like, just put up the best content I can, work with people I really like, invest in companies that I really believe in. And I think everything's going to work itself out with the financial side of things. And then the metrics and all that, you know, all that comes, all that's going to be there for me. So
yeah,
I think that's like a good North Star to have with it. Focus on that and just put the passion into what I'm doing, what I'm making, like talking with you, like I love talking with you, right? This is like, this is the kind of stuff I think that is what I love to do. So I got to figure out a way to do more of this. Sometimes you got to cut it down here. You know, it's all about edit. It's all about this and that. And that's going to decide what the views are. That's going to decide what the metrics are and what the perception is. But for me, I just love doing content that I enjoy. I love talking to people I like, and I'm going to do more of that. That's a big goal.
That's how I am too with a lot of stuff. Like, I don't really do a lot of podcasts for one, because I think that a lot of it comes down to me telling my story, and a lot of that stuff I want to save for my own channel and everything. But yeah, I basically just do podcasts with people that I like and am friends with and stuff, because then it's just way more fun.
Do you set goals for your channel, or do you have like a million subscriber goal, or how do you?
Yeah, the million subscriber goal is it's just nice to have a good long-term goal to keep me going. But you know, my dad, he passed away like 2 years ago, and he, like, the last voicemail that he left me was a week before he died. And he said, you know, at that time the channel was kind of going in like a little bit of a funk. It was just something that was weird. And he's like, hey man, just keep going. Don't ever stop doing your primary channel. And I like, for one of my videos at the end of it, it was actually at a Hustler meetup game, I took that voicemail and I put like a bunch of clips.
I remember that one. Yeah.
And so it was just cool that he told me to just like never stop. And that was kind of the last
thing he said.
Thing he said, really. I, for just to like keep that promise to him kind of a thing, I kind of never want to stop also.
I hope not. I love it.
Yeah.
I love watching. I like seeing how high you can go. I mean, before me and Doug used to say the ceiling's 100K subscribers. Now you're like, what would you have?
A little over 700.
That's crazy, bro. 700,000 subscribers. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I love it, man. I mean, listen, I love seeing you locked in. You know, it sounds like you got your goals for poker, you got your goals for content, you got the family goals coming up. So, you know, the next time maybe check in with you, you're gonna be having that family rolling, you're gonna be having these events rolling, and I'm gonna be excited to follow along. I mean, let's get it. It's gonna be a big week for you. It's gonna be a great week for you. It's gonna be a great year. And
yeah, two days, man. Baby's coming in 2 days. So. Yeah,
last minute, not nervous at all? Or?
At this, I mean, the last like few days kind of hit me, but Amber, she's a nurse practitioner, and she has two kids from the previous marriage. So she's like the veteran and ultimate safety net. So if I was going through this for the first time with somebody else who was going through it with the first time, then I would be way, way more nervous. But I'm just really confident in her ability to do everything.
Nice.
That it makes it a lot easier. But yeah, the last couple of days I've been starting to get nervous and just thinking about how much life's going to be different. And really at this point, I just hope that the whole birth process goes smoothly and everyone comes out healthy.
Well, listen, we're going to be praying for you. I know the Legion out there, if they made it this far, they're going to be praying for you. And always a pleasure, Poppy. Always good to see you. Guys in the chat, if you made it this far, appreciate you guys very much. Subscribe to Brad's channel, Mr. Brad Owen, and he's posting content everywhere. I'm posting content on my YouTube channel. Smash the like button, the usual stuff. Comment below. We'll be back soon. And shout out to everybody out there for support, and shout out to Gorilla Gaming, one of the sponsors on the channel. You know, Gorilla Gaming, these guys are the best. And that's it. See you guys later. Peace out.